Welcome to Off the Shelf. I'm your host, Pete Sox, the Catholic book blogger here at Breadbox Media. And do we have a great show today? I know I say that every week, but I'm really looking forward to our discussion today on what is a common devotion among Catholics, and yet at the same time can be one of most taken for granted devotion as well. And I'm talking about the Rosary. Today I have with us Gretchen Crow. She is the editor-in-chief of our Sunday Visitor News Weekly, where she oversees the publication of the only national Catholic weekly newspaper in the United States. In addition to planning and editing the print edition, she also oversees the content of our Sunday Visitor News.com, OSVnews.com, and our Sunday Visitor social media content. Gretchen also is an award-winning writer and photographer. Welcome to the show, one very busy Gretchen Crow.
Thank you so much. It's great to be with you.
Thanks for being here. So we'll start off with this. As I mentioned, we're going to talk about the Rosary today, and in particular the book that you compiled slash edited for our Sunday Visitor entitled Why the Rosary, Why Now? So how did that book come about?
Well, thanks so much for asking. It's wonderful to be with you. So we're right now, we're in the middle of the centenary of the apparitions of our Blessed Mother at Fatima, Portugal. She came to three shepherd children in 1917, six different times. And this is just an amazing opportunity for the Church at this 100-year mark to reflect on the message of Mary, what she told the shepherd children, and really what she was trying to get across in her visits to them. And one of the main messages that our Blessed Mother gave Francisco, Jacinta, and Lucia was an encouragement. Really, she implored them to pray the Rosary often, even daily, for peace in the world. And at that time, of course, the world was facing World War One. It was a very it was a time of much upheaval, violence, war, and that was a message that Mary gave to the children to share with the world. And though it's been 100 years, you know, we look at our world today, our war-torn world with so much violence, so much evil, terrorism. I mean, we have those incredibly awful acts that have happened in London recently. This message is just as relevant today as it was 100 years ago. And, you know, as you mentioned, the Rosary is something that I think a lot of Catholics take for granted. You know, I think one of the first rosaries that I got that I can remember really having an impact on my life was the rosary that my parents got me for my first communion. It was a little, in a little white pouch, you know, and it said my rosary on it, and it has a small white beads. And you know, you get it at such a young age, and as cradle Catholics especially, we know that we have this tool in our of our faith that's here, but we sometimes don't pray with them as much as we maybe buy them for ourselves as souvenirs, or we buy them for other people when we're out at shrines or gift shops or something like that. And it's just, this is just such an incredible opportunity to pause, to reflect on the 100-year anniversary of Mary's apparitions at Fatima, to reflect on really her her asking us to pray the rosary, to pray it for peace in our world, and to do it regularly. And one of the great things about this book is that while, you know, Mary is imploring us to pray the rosary for peace, what the book does is it brings examples of people from, of holy men and women throughout the history of the Church who have prayed the rosary regularly and who have found incredible favors by it. So the book was amazing to put together, and it's just wonderful to be able to share it with you all.
Awesome. So can you give us a general synopsis of what the book is? Obviously, I mentioned it was a compilation of different things. So maybe you can give us a little general idea of what the book is.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Rosary, so the book, Why the Rosary, Why Now, is eight different chapters. And each chapter is basically making a case for why, as I just mentioned, for why people should pray the Rosary more every day, more in today's world. It starts with an introduction. And then each chapter has an introduction written by me. So there's a 3 or 4 page introduction into each subject matter. And then that follows by a text that I've included, as I mentioned, from some particular notable member of the Church. So, for example, it starts with chapter one, and I have it, and I, you know, I call chapter one to break through the noise. So the title of every chapter is basically answering the question, why the rosary, why now, if that makes sense. So chapter one, to break through the noise. And that's a homily that Cardinal Albino Luciani, who then came, went on to be Pope John Paul I, wrote on the centenary of the Feast of the Holy Rosary. And basically, what that chapter is looking at is that the Rosary is an incredible opportunity for us if in the 21st century to help us break through the noise of our daily lives. So, Pete, if you're like me and like most everybody else in the world today, we are just followed around by our smartphones. Yep. You know, we're constantly texting. We're constantly on the move. We're constantly checking our email and on social media. And this just is a reminder to say the Rosary is an opportunity for prayer. It's an opportunity for silence. It's an opportunity to shut out the noise that's found in our just constant media blitz today, particularly the profession. Yeah.
Right. And I actually was going to dive into that a little deeper here. So let's go ahead and we'll circumvent it and we'll let the ship flow the way it flows here. The Holy Spirit's our guide here today.
Excellent.
That chapter to me was probably one of the most striking ones in the book when I went through it. The noise factor, the noise. Here you have Cardinal Albino Luciani, who became Pope John Paul I, writing about distractions, things that take us away from our spiritual lives, and it's in 1973.
Yes.
And what he wrote is so relevant for 2017. It almost makes you wonder what he'd think if he was here now. I mean, he had such a problem with how things were in 73. I mean, let's look at it 30 years later. Wow. And one comical thing I must point out, Gretchen, your front cover has a rosary setting on top of a tablet. How great is that?
That's right. That's right. That's right. Well, I mean, it's just a perfect compilation of what we're facing in the world today, you know? I mean, the rosary is here to help us with our current struggles, and breaking through the noise of our constant media is one of those struggles. And you're absolutely right. I mean, Cardinal Luciani wrote that in 1973, and I think I say in the book, you know, what would he think of early 21st century America if he were around today? You know, so it's really a great opportunity for us to remember the power of the rosary just in the actual praying of it. You know, just in the taking the time to put everything else aside, to turn off our smartphones, to turn off the television, and just sit there quietly fingering those beautiful beads. So, you know, it helps foster silence and foster that kind of contemplation that is so missing in the world today.
And one of the things I want to do throughout our time together today is go through some of those eight reasons, eight chapters as to why. And I'll backtrack here just a little bit, and I want to steal a title and turn the tables on you a bit. And that part of it is why the rosary. Why is the rosary such an important and integral part of our spiritual journeys? Because I really liked on the back cover where it states that this book is not your typical how-to book, but it's a why-to book. And I think people miss that aspect. I mean, they know the rosaries out there. We talked about it earlier. They pick them up at gift shops. You know, it becomes to the point, I think, where it's diminished to a gift for an occasion. And people just don't understand the prayer itself. So why the rosary? Why?
That's right. Well, because it's very simple. The rosary leads us to Mary, and Mary leads us to Jesus. And as Catholic Christians, with Jesus is exactly where we want to be. The rosary is really a pathway that leads us to the truth of Jesus Christ. And that's what you can see. As you meditate on the mysteries of the rosary, you are just brought into what's happening in Mary's life. You're brought into just the, you know, the events of her life and what she's going through, and the events of Jesus's life. And it's so powerful just to sit and meditate on those. You know, it can be hard sometimes when you're praying the rosary to figure out, well, what do I do now? Am I saying the prayers? Am I just repeating the prayers? Am I meditating on the mystery? Am I, you know, thinking about my own life and how they, you know, how the intentions that I'm bringing forth in this rosary, you know, what am I supposed to be doing now? But really, I think the opportunity for us, very simply, is to go to Mary and have her lead us to her son. And the rosary is an incredibly powerful tool for that through meditating on the mysteries. And it's such a gift to us that, you know, sometimes we forget that we have these beautiful four beautiful sets of mysteries that illuminate Christ's life for mm-hmm. us. And as Catholic Christians, that's where we want to be. We want to be at the heart of the gospel. And heart of the gospel, of course, is Jesus Christ, and Mary and the Rosary can bring us right there. So, I mean, that to me is a no-brainer. If anybody's looking for a reason to pray the Rosary, that's right there. I mean, we all are called to a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. It's, you know, that's how we can determine our vocation. It's how we can determine, you know, why we're here on this earth. Mm-hmm. And the Rosary can bring us there. And that is not something to be taken for granted. And it's something that we really need to remember and take advantage of.
Right on. So now the second half of the title, Why Now? I think we kind of already touched upon that a little bit. You know, we've had the terrorist attacks in London. We see all this stuff going on. Actually, as a recording, it's today. There's some talk of some other stuff going on in the Mideast. Just terrible things going on. So we pretty much know why. But again, that emphasis is not there for a lot of people, I think, to take up this devotion and use it for what it was meant to be. And in your introduction, I really liked another line in there where you said, the Rosary is a pathway that leads us to the truth of Jesus Christ, a path that, as we will see in the following pages, has been trod steadily and faithfully by so many men and women of faith over the centuries.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, think about our world today and the things that we're facing. We're facing just problems, and this is, again, what each of the chapters lead into. Incredible secularism in our world today, just the growth of the nuns, N-O-N-E-S. So we see more people who are living without faith. We see more people who are leaving the church, who lack a devotion to the church. Even people who are Catholic, baptized Catholics, are struggling with finding a connection and a devotion to the church. In our world today, we're struggling with family life, of course. You know, we've had the legalization of same-sex marriage in recent years. And we've got also just a lack of emphasis on the real power of the family, the familial unit, as, you know, kind of the basic cell of society. The Rosary, again, brings us, helps strengthen this family life. It helps increase our Christian discipleship. There's a beautiful excerpt by John Paul II, Rosarium Virginis Mariae, where he really shows how the Rosary increases our call to discipleship and really what that means for us. And then, as you mentioned, and as I mentioned, you know, we've got the increasing terrorism in the world. So we're always looking for ways to combat evil and to find peace in the world. The Rosary, again, brings us there as well. And, of course, you know, last but not least, and I really want to emphasize this, is that we're all called to be saints. You know, we are all, we all have the universal call to holiness. And the eighth chapter, To Become Saints, really focuses on how saints throughout the history of the church have used the Rosary and just become holier because of it. There's a particular passage by St. Thérèse of Lisieux, who's very dear to my husband and I, where she says that she basically struggles to pray the Rosary. You know, she feels bad about it. She has a hard time concentrating and focusing. And you know, that's the beauty of the saints. They are people who are holy people, of course, who have grown in virtue throughout their lives. They're also real people. So you read that passage by St. Thérèse and you say, St. Thérèse struggled to pray the Rosary. She fell asleep praying the Rosary sometimes, I'm sure, like I do. You know, this is somebody who achieved holiness, who achieved sanctity. You know, if she could struggle through that reality, so can I.
Right.
So I think that's just an incredible thing to remember, too, as we're all facing the call to holiness and looking for that.
Indeed. Good stuff, powerful stuff. And we're going to take a quick break. I'm here with Gretchen Crowe today talking about her book, Why the Rosary, Why Now? From our Sunday visitor. You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger, and we'll be right back. Shelf. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And again, we are here today with Gretchen Crowe. She is the editor, compiler, author of the book, Why the Rosary, Why Now? From Our Sunday Visitor. And Gretchen, we left off last segment talking about the last chapter of the book, and we're bouncing around a little bit, but that's fine. And it was about the saints. And one of the reasons, as we had noted, is your book set up in eight chapters, with each of those chapters being an answer to the question, why do we need the rosary? And the eighth chapter is, we need the rosary to become saints. So let's talk about that a bit. What does it mean for us to become saints?
Well, you know, Lumen Gentium from Vatican II really puts forth the universal call to holiness, which is what we are all called to. So no matter our vocation, you know, a lot of people think that holiness is only meant for priests or women or men religious, but the universal call to holiness is for all people, for all lay people as well as religious people in religious life. So we need to remember that throughout our lives to practice the virtues that that bring us to a deeper holiness and a deeper alignment with Christ and His will. And the Rosary, of course, can lead us there. Something that I include in that final chapter is kind of an excerpt from St. Louis de Montfort, who was, of course, a great proponent of the Rosary and of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And he has this text, The Methods for Saying the Rosary. And within that text, he suggested, contemplating the mysteries paired with certain virtues that, of course, you know, and as we are growing in holiness, we, of course, want to grow in virtue. And I just think that that's just brilliant because it makes the mysteries of the Rosary, of course, apart from meditating on the life of Christ, which is so important, can help us align ourselves with Jesus, it really brings it home to our particular circumstances. So, for example, when we meditate on the joyful mysteries of the Rosary, St. Louis de Montfort suggests that with the mystery, the first mystery of the Annunciation, that we meditate on humility. So we take that opportunity for that Our Father and that decade of the Rosary to really focus on the rote prayer, of course, of the Hail Mary and the Our Father and the Glory Be, but in addition to pray for humility in our lives. For the next mystery, for the Visitation, he suggests that we pray for love of neighbor, for the mystery of the Nativity, for love of poverty and the pure, and of the poor. For the mystery of the Presentation, he suggests that we pray for wisdom and purity of heart and body. And then for that final joyful mystery, for the finding of the child Jesus in the temple, St. Louis de Montfort suggests that we pray for a conversion of sinners and for piety in our lives. That to me is just a really tactile way to make the Rosary more relevant to our lives. And St. Louis de Montfort suggested those combination of virtues for the joyful mysteries, the sorrowful mysteries, and the glorious mysteries, which, of course, are the traditional mysteries of the Rosary. And, one of the things that I got to do, which was really, really a lot of fun, and I did it, it kind of in conjunction with my husband, who's a theologian, we talked about, you know, what could that pairing of the mysteries be for the luminous mysteries and those virtues that might be applicable there, which, of course, were introduced by Pope St. John Paul II in 2002. And so that was a great challenge and also a real great discernment what those mysteries might be able to be calling us to in terms of virtue along those same lines as St. Louis de Montfort was leading us. Okay. So that's just one example of the beautiful way that the saints who have been so affected by the Rosary can continue to help us today.
Right. And let's give you some props on those luminous mysteries. Here's what they are so that everybody knows. For the baptism of Jesus in the river, you suggest praying for obedience and vocation. For the wedding feast at Cana, you suggest for a manifestation of God in the world through our actions, particularly in marriage and family life. The proclamation of the kingdom of God for an evangelistic spirit. The transfiguration of Jesus for ongoing conversion to Christ. And the institution of the Eucharist for a deeper love of and reverence for the Blessed Sacrament. So I think those are just as fitting as the ones that St. Louis de Montfort constructed so many years ago. Thank you for that addition to the book, by the way.
Thank you.
One thing in this chapter that kind of struck me was, you know, we all know Pope St. John Paul II's devotion to Mary. We know his devoutness to praying the rosary. But the one surprising figure in here that I had never connected with the rosary much, it might have just been my own lack of knowledge, is Pope St. John the 23rd. What all did he have as devotion to the rosary and that he contributed or thought of it?
This text is something that I had stumbled upon. I love John the 23rd, and I wanted to make sure that I included him if it was possible. You know, so I was discerning the particular text, and I found this kind of at the back of a book somewhere. It's just not very well known, but it's John the 23rd really is saying that it was written in an apostolic letter called The Religious Convention and the Rosary, and he was saying that each decade of the Hail Marys can provide its own picture, and those can be illuminated in three different ways. So in mystical contemplation, in private reflection, and in pious intention. And he goes on to identify each of those three aspects. Contemplation, so pure, clear, and immediate thoughts of every rosary, of every mystery of the rosary. And he says, quote, as we contemplate, we find ourselves in close communion of thought and feeling with the teaching and life of Jesus, Son of God and Son of Mary, who lived on this earth, redeeming, teaching, and sanctifying. I just love that quote. I mean, that is what we can get through our contemplation of the rosary and of the mysteries. He said, you know, and the second element he mentioned was reflection. Reflection on the mysteries, bringing out the fullness of that, he said, quote, diffuses its bright radiance over the praying soul. He said, everyone finds in each mystery a good and proper teaching for himself, for his sanctification, and for the conditions of his own life under the constant guidance of the Holy Spirit. And again, that's kind of what we were reflecting on with the virtues from St. Louis de Montfort. We have the ability to take every mystery, and as ancient as those might be, and as, you know, we might think, well, this has to do with the Holy Family. How can this apply to my life? That the challenge and the opportunity for us is to really say, this is how it applies to my life.
Right.
This is how I can really gain from this decade and this mystery. And the only way to do that is to reflect on them.
Yeah, right on.
And then he mentions the intentions, which, you know, I often, and, you know, when I pray the rosary, I do intentions in a couple of different ways. The first is if I want to pray the whole rosary for a particular friend who's suffering from an illness or a particular intention, then I'll say it up at the beginning. So after the first three Hail Marys, I'll offer up the intention for the whole rosary, and then I'll just pray through then throughout. Mm-hmm. Or you can devote each decade easily to a particular intention. So sometimes if I have several, I'll start with each Our Father and say, I'd like to offer this decade of the rosary for this particular intention. And that's really what John the 23rd is saying, mm-hmm. that the rosary has as part of its, great opportunity, an opportunity for intercession. Intercession for persons, institutions, or necessities of a personal or social nature. And that's something that, you know, we have to remember. We're not just, it can be easy to just kind of truck through the rosary, you know, mm-hmm. and say, well, I prayed a rosary. I did something good today, which is wonderful. We should always want to pray the rosary. But if we can do it with an intention behind it, that makes it all the more meaningful, and it just takes advantage all the more of the opportunity of this beautiful prayer.
Right, right. So I want to backtrack into some of the other chapters of the book. You got some pretty heavy hitters in here you use for examples throughout each chapter. And going back to chapter 2, you talk about how the rosary can spurn a deeper devotion to the church. And you centralize that chapter around Venerable Fulton Sheen. And, you know, if anybody has not had an opportunity to hear or see Fulton Sheen, you are missing out big time. His books are readily available. Go on YouTube. You can see his talks. Amazing, amazing televangelist, in essence, way ahead of his time. Great stuff. And in the beginning, actually in the first paragraph of chapter 2, you pull a quote from his book, The World's First Love, Mary, Mother of God, which was published in 1952. Mm-hmm. And he goes into very descriptive stuff, talking about Mary as a dream, a mother, a spouse. And you also go into his talk, The Woman I Love. And this quote I thought was pretty cool. He indicated how Mary and the church are one, intertwined, because he said, as we discontinue our devotion to the Blessed Mother, there is always a decline in the love of the Church. I thought that was a very striking statement.
Oh, it definitely is. This is actually a talk that I found on YouTube. So if anyone wants to listen to Archbishop Sheen, as you mentioned, everyone should. And, you know, you could easily Google The Woman I Love. I think it should come up. It's an incredible, incredible talk by an incredible, as you mentioned, evangelist, televangelist especially. But, yes, he's making the point that the connection between Mary and the Church is they're intertwined. One, what happens to one happens to the other. So, you know, when he says, as we discontinue our devotion to the Blessed Mother, there's a decline in the love of Church. If you flip it around, it means that if we increase our devotion to the Blessed Mother, we will find an increase in the love of the Church. And that's the opportunity here. You know, as you know, I mentioned throughout that text, you know, there's been many surveys, and I note one from May 2015, but there are so many out there that note the significant drop in the number of Catholic, practicing Catholics in the United States, and then a significant increase in those who identify as religiously unaffiliated, as I mentioned before, the nuns, N-O-N-E-S. And we're finding that a lot of the reason for this break and this growth in the religiously unaffiliated is because people are less devoted to the Church. And a lot of that is because of these there's a great discrepancy between, of course, our society today and the moral teachings of the Church. And so you're finding a greater division, greater odds between people who may at one time have been practicing Catholics, or who may at least at one time have had more of a tolerance for religion. We're finding that number kind of go down, the number of nuns increasing, and more and more people kind of pitted against the Church, unfortunately. So the rosary then is an opportunity to say, we're facing these struggles. If a lack of devotion to the Blessed Mother leads to a lack of, you know, affiliation with the Church, then if we increase our devotion to the Blessed Mother, we can find an increase in our devotion to the Church. So it's a beautiful opportunity that Archbishop Sheen points out to us.
Yep.
And the text that's actually included with this chapter is from The World's First Love, which I mentioned, which is all about a book that he wrote devoted to Mary. And it's chapter 8, Roses and Prayers. And it's one of my favorite excerpts in the book because it talks about how the rosary can really assist with people who are in three different situations in life. Mm-hmm. So he mentions the worried. So as I mentioned to you earlier, I am a new mom, and that has taken on, that has given worry an entirely new definition in my life already for my little baby who's only a month old. So he's saying, you know, if we're worried, we can turn to the rosary and we can kind of use that rote prayer and remember that we're offering our lives to God. We're offering our worry to Him. We're offering that up. And he just has a beautiful reflection on how the rosary can help those who are struggling with anxiety and worry, as so many of us do, for so many different reasons.
Right.
He also mentions that the rosary is a wonderful tool for both the intellectual, which I love, and the unlearned. And I love how he pits those two together, because you think, well, isn't that everybody? Pretty much, yes. Pretty much it's all of us. You know, he's saying that, you know, one can say, even as, or he says, the rosary is, quote, both a mental and a vocal prayer. And he has this beautiful line. It's one where, quote, intellectual elephants may bathe, and the simple birds may also sip, unquote. And basically what he's saying is that the rosary has something to offer everybody. It's a prayer that's simple. It's easy to memorize the prayers and to repeat them. It's a wonderful, that makes it a wonderful tool to pray with families. Even from an early age, the children can lead the Hail Marys. They know what's coming because they can finger the beads and they can be prepared. But it also has so much intellect, so much to offer those of us who are looking maybe to dive a little bit deeper, as I mentioned, through the intercessions, through the contemplation of the mysteries, through the growing in our virtue. It has so much for each one of us, and he really brings that to life.
Yep, sure.
And then the final element that he mentions is the sick. So for those of us who are just facing illness or facing, God forbid, terminal illness even, the rosary is an opportunity for us to just give our lives over to God and to trust in his will. And he is so eloquent in his mentioning of those three different categories. I really mm-hmm. encourage people especially to read that because it applies to all of us.
Yes, indeed it does. So we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Pete Sox, the Catholic Folk Blogger, and I'm here today with Gretchen Crowe talking about her book, Why the Rosary, Why Now, and we'll be right back. A Catholic book blogger here today with Gretchen Crowe to talk about her Why to book about the Rosary called Why the Rosary, Why Now, out now from our Sunday Visitor. And Gretchen, we've covered some ground here today about different aspects of the Rosary, and we've looked at different chapters within your book to hear what people have to say. We looked at what the saints said. We just covered in the last segment what Venerable Fulton Sheen had to say. I want to get into the seventh chapter where you look at Pope Leo XIII and his comments or his stance or his opinion on combating secularism. Again, this kind of harkens back to the beginning of the first chapter when we talked about the person we know as Pope John Paul I in 1973 writing about the noise in society. So here we have Pope Leo with a great concern about combating secularism. And if these, mm-hmm. if he was only in our time, boy, oh boy.
Yeah, that's right. And he, you know, Leo XIII is a tremendous proponent of the Rosary. He wrote 11 different encyclicals on the Rosary, and it's only one that is included in this book, but there are so many more out there that are worth diving into. He is writing at a time at the end of the 19th century where he's facing the own rise of atheists and secular humanists in the world, and he's really, really working hard. And if you go back and look at his reflections on other topics that he wrote during the time of his reign, he's working hard to speak to the individual, the common man, from being swayed by the arguments of these atheists and secular humanists. Of course, you know, if you look at the 21st century today, the rise in atheists and secular mm-hmm. humanists is again, we're being hit by a huge wave of that. It's one of the greatest issues of our time. And so, again, we're saying what he faced then is what we're facing now. And then he was a huge proponent of the Rosary. So then again, this is the opportunity for us now. The Rosary is an opportunity to come together and to kind of combat that growing secularism. You know, one of the stats in which I mentioned was a study that was done by the Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate mm-hmm. at Georgetown University. They published a study last August in which it indicated that the typical age, the average age in which young people were leaving the faith was 13 years old, which just baffled my mind, because it seems to me I couldn't even tell you, you know, what I wanted to do, you know, where I wanted to go to college, if I wanted to go to college at mm-hmm. age 13. You know, I don't know how you can make such a life-changing decision at 13, but this is what this study had indicated. And it also indicated that those students who said that they would leave by age 13 were asked, would they ever consider returning to the faith? And only, again, 13% said they would ever consider returning to the Catholic Church. Of course, you never know what God can do, and you never know how he can work in life, and you can never count people out. Of course not. And we always need to make sure that the door is open for people to return to the church. But still, that number was pretty alarming to me, and I think to a lot of people. And so that's what we're facing today. Mm-hmm. And that's what something similar to what Pope Leo was facing when he reigned from 1878 to 1903. Mm-hmm. And you can see that in his writings. So he's facing, we're just facing such a drumbeat of secularism. And right. It can be so enticing, especially for young people. So the rosary and its kind of quietness and its steadfastness, again, helps us focus on Jesus Christ. And that's really the important thing.
Right, right. And, Gretchen, something just struck me as you're saying that. One of the great things about being a book reviewer is the exposure I have to the different titles that come out from the wide range of publishers out there. And two previous episodes that will have aired by the time this one airs, we were discussing as a topic catechesis and the catechesis of our youth, CCD programs, how youth today are sent to these programs. Majority of them are dropped off by the parents. Parents leave. You rarely see these kids in mass. For some reason, the parents still feel an obligation to send them through that, but they're not engaged. And that number that you were alarmed by really didn't alarm me because of what was said in these other sources that I've talked to. It all goes hand in hand. Catechesis has to start with us, the parents. If your parents aren't engaged in the church, the children aren't going to be engaged in the church. So a 13-year-old can make that decision when they don't have the parents saying, you're not going to make that decision. So that really, to me, speaks volumes to the importance of what you've done in this book, Why the Rosary, Why Now? By bringing this tool back into the forefront, if people read this book, and they should, so they have a better understanding of how the rosary can help that. Again, the rosary's mysteries that you go through, the complete, if you do it the one a day, you have gone through the entire New Testament. Mm-hmm. It is no better catechetical tool than the rosary, in my opinion.
That's absolutely right. And, the parents are the primary educators of the faith, and it starts at home. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And that's one of the beauties of the rosary is, as I mentioned, it's not difficult to pray.
Nope.
It's not difficult to encourage our children, particularly, our older children, but you could have, easily younger children could help as well, to lead the prayers. It helps them feel invested. They can follow along. The mysteries are stories that children can understand, that you can read to them. Or you can just discuss in just very simple terms. It doesn't have to be anything great. It doesn't have to be anything of great, theological, content. We're just telling the story of Christ and how he came and changed the world. And if we do that right in the home, it's going to ripple and have manifestations outside the home. But you're absolutely right. It starts in the home. It starts with us. It starts with the parents. And we can do it. We can do it. Just make the commitment, even start slow. You don't have to pray the rosary every day. Pray it on the way to church, on the way to mass and on Sundays. Start that way or on the way home. Start one night, one evening, of the week. Just make the commitment. Now, one of the things that it's so easy to do when it comes to prayer is to put everything else before it. You mentioned CCD, et cetera, on Sundays. So one of the great problems with that right now is that parents are choosing sports and sporting events over catechetical opportunities for their children. So whether it's on Sundays or on weeknights, whenever it's offered, the sports win out or the school projects win out or the homework wins out. There's always something else we can do rather than pray. When praying, is the first thing that we should be doing. And so, but we're not held accountable. You know, we don't hold ourselves accountable. And we need to, because it can make all the difference in the world.
Right. Indeed it will. And, you know, this segues perfectly into chapter three. So that's head there. To strengthen families. You talk about Father Patrick Peyton, who's been monikered mm-hmm. as the Rosary Priest, due in large part to his famous saying, the family that prays together stays together.
That's right.
So can you tell us a little bit about the work Father Patrick Peyton did in promoting the Rosary and what got him the name the Rosary Priest?
Sure. So Father Peyton, without Father Peyton, the Rosary would not be nearly as well known as it is today. He began this family Rosary crusade where he went and he used radio, he used film, he used signs, and then he had these Rosary rallies. And he led more than 260 rosary rallies on six continents in his life. And he promoted family prayer, particularly in the form of the rosary, to millions of people. And it was truly a movement. And Father Peyton, his story is so beautiful. The excerpt that I include is from All for Her. It's his autobiography. And it's showing pretty much why he became so devoted to the rosary. So it says, okay, he led this apostolate, this family rosary crusade, but why? So it goes back and you look at his early life, and he reflects on how no matter what, and at the end of the day, his father would gather the family around and they would commit to praying the rosary every night as a family. And in fact, it was so automatic, you know, it was so expected that when Father Peyton left home for the first time to go work outside the home, and he was staying with a Catholic family, so he would feel, you know, just more at home, part of the community. The family went to bed in the evening, the first evening he was there, without praying the rosary, and he was shocked. And he was just saying, what's going on my whole life? But, you know, I'd been getting together with, you know, we'd be gathering to pray the evening prayer with our families, and this family doesn't do it. And he was really distressed, actually. And so he realized from an early age that was kind of really imparted to his life how important praying the rosary was on a regular basis. But what really happened to Father Peyton to make the Blessed Mother and the Rosary so integral to his life was that when he was in seminary, he became very, very ill. He had tuberculosis. They thought that there was no recovery from it. And he just thought that he was going to die, and he wanted to become a priest, and of course he wanted to live. And he turned over his illness and he turned over his life to Mary. And he said that a gentleman, a priest, came to visit him and said, Mary can do anything God can do. So if Mary prays to God for something and he does it, he'll never say no to her. And then Father Peyton said, well, maybe I need to take advantage of, you know, the rosary isn't just something you pray every night out of habit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you pray the rosary because Mary has the ear of her son, and
right.
her son can make miraculous things happen. And that's indeed what happened. Instead of going down this path of this very difficult path of many operations, Father Peyton said, nope, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to pray the rosary. And he just devoted his life to Mary, and he was healed. And the doctors had no explanation for why that healing happened. It was truly a miracle. And Father Peyton said, that's it. For the rest of my life, I'm going to give everything to the Blessed Mother. And in fact, he says, quote, I promised her all the merit of my priesthood until death. The merit and glory of every action I would ever perform would be hers and hers alone, unquote. And that's the commitment that he made. And he went on to have an incredible apostolate and ministry mm-hmm. devoted to Mary and the Rosary.
Awesome stuff. We're going to take another break, our last one. You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Pete Sox, the Catholic Book Blogger, here with Gretchen Crow. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Off the Shelf. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger, here today with Gretchen Crow, and we've been talking about her book, Why the Rosary, Why Now, available from our Sunday Visitor Publishing. We've covered a lot of ground. And Gretchen, for our last segment, I want to go back into a topic we started talking about, and one of the reasons for the rosary is for peace in the world. And you talk about, in that chapter, you focus on Father Hubert Schiffer, who is actually writing about World War II, the Rosary of Hiroshima. And I promised you in the break I was going to bring Wonder Woman into this, so here we go. If you have not seen it, as you or as others have, it's based, Wonder Woman's based on World War II. And there's a scene that struck me. The backstory to it, without spoiling it for everyone, is Wonder Woman believes that the German army is being controlled by the Greek god Ares, the god of war. And she basically defeats the general whom she thinks Ares has possessed, and the Germans continue to fight. And Steve Rogers, the British, playing the British spy by Chris Pine, looks at her when she's sitting here in unbelief that the war still continues around them and the fighting's still going on, that there's not peace, because that's what they believed. When Ares was gone, there'd be peace. Steve Rogers looks at her and he said, what if it's not him? What if it's us? Which I thought was a pretty poignant point in the movie. You know, we want to blame this on everybody else and others, but what if it's really us? You know, what if, you know, in your book, what if your book is meant to bring people back to the rosary for what it's meant to be used for, an instrument of peace? What if it's us and it's our negligence of the rosary? What if it's us and our negligence of prayer? What if all this going on around us with the turmoil we see in the Middle East and all around us is really our fault because of our lack of action?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And you know really why we know this is because Mary told us.
Yep.
You know, as we mentioned this, we're in the 100th anniversary of the apparitions of Our Lady to the three shepherd children at Fatima. And in Portugal, when she appeared to them, she said, quote, continue to say the rosary every day in honor of Our Lady of the Rosary to obtain the peace of the world and the end of the war, because only she can obtain it. And she's saying that's us to do. We need to show our willingness. We need to show that we believe that we have the power, we have the faith in Jesus Christ to pray and for peace, but also to work for peace. That absolutely lies on our shoulders. You know, we have free will. We've been blessed with it. And we need to make sure that we take the opportunities that we have in our lives to pray for and to work for peace. So you're absolutely right. It's an incredible opportunity. I like to think of it as opportunity, not as, you know, something that the chance that we've missed out on, but an opportunity that we still have to do the right thing.
Yep.
This chapter is written by a Jesuit, Father Hubert Schiffer. And his story is just incredible. You know, as you mentioned, it takes place in World War II, but more specifically, it takes place in Hiroshima when the atomic bomb, the Enola Gay, was dropped on Hiroshima on August 6th, 1945. Father Schiffer was one of four Jesuits who lived just a handful of miles from the epicenter from where the bomb was dropped, and they lived 8 blocks is where their rectory was. And not only did all four of them survive, and they had minor wounds, but they all survived. None of them suffered any lasting radiation effects. it's another just miracle. And the four of them credited Mary for their safety. And they said, quote, we were living the message of Fatima and we prayed the rosary every day. And they said, prayer is more powerful than the atom bomb.
That's wow.
Incredible, because when you think about what's the most destructive thing that human beings, you know, have done on this planet, the atomic bomb is right up there at the top of the list. And so for four men who lived through that, who survived it, who credited Mary, and then say, remind us that prayer is more powerful than the atomic bomb, it's just incredible. So in the text that's included in that chapter, Father Schiffer is writing in first person, really stressing the importance of praying for peace. And then he invites others to join him in this prayer for peace, which again, as you say, puts this right back at our doorsteps. You know, it says we have the opportunity here to do good in the world through this beautiful prayer of the rosary, particularly when it comes to praying for peace. So it's a very, very moving portion of the book, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And then you segue right into the next chapter, 6, which you're talking about fighting evil, which kind of goes hand in hand with it. And in that chapter, you're taking a look at your central focus on Pope Pius XII and his encyclical on reciting the rosary. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So again, the rosary is just an opportunity to combat all of the difficulties that we're facing in the world, but certainly terrorism is one of them. And that was no different now than it was during the time of Pope Pius XII. And, you know, we have to remember that that the rosary is this opportunity to fight the terrorism, to be a balm, a healing balm in this world that is so shaken up, especially right now, from all of these activities. There's a beautiful kind of interview that's included at the beginning of this introduction that I wrote with a priest in Nigeria who, as I'm sure you'll remember, back in 2014, that awful kidnapping by Boko Haram. I think almost 300 young women were kidnapped. And the bishop had a vision in which, you know, he was praying for peace, and he was praying the rosary in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament, and he had a vision of Jesus who appeared to him, and Jesus was holding a sword that he handed to the bishop, and the bishop recalled that when he reached out to take the sword turned into a rosary. And then Jesus spoke to him saying 3 times, Boko Haram is gone, Boko Haram is gone, Boko Haram is gone, indicating clearly to the bishop that it's not through violence that we combat evil. It's through prayer. It's through peace. It's through fighting in our own way, as people of devotion, to Christ. And the rosary is a perfect way to do it. And it's, as I mentioned, just an opportunity to use the rosary as a weapon, as Padre Pio said. You know, he said, sources said that he wore it around his arm every night because it was his weapon. It was his defense against the evils and the problems in the world. And it can be ours as well.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked a lot about why the rosary, why now, your book. How do you incorporate the rosary into your own life for those that either A, haven't done it yet, or B, are struggling with ways to find to do it?
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, it's, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it's all about commitment. It's all about making the time. You know, we might think we don't have 20 minutes, but we do. We just need to we need to commit. We need to find it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that we have a great opportunity to pray the rosary. You know, we don't have to be sitting in a particular spot. We don't have to be sitting in a church. We don't have to be sitting in front of the Blessed Sacrament, although it's wonderful if you wanted to. But the rosary is portable. Not only are our rosaries portable, so we can pray them while we're, you know, going for a jog or taking a walk or driving a car, but even if we don't have a rosary on us, we've got 10 wonderful fingers that can help us keep track of our prayers if need be. And so we can pray it seriously anytime, anywhere. So I think that's the important thing to remember. If, you know, just take the time. Use a commute. I am very fortunate. I have a 20-minute commute almost to get to work at our Sunday Visitor in Huntington, Indiana. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect rosary, either to work or back from work. Right now, you know, I mentioned I'm on maternity leave. It's one of my favorite things to do is at night when I'm up with the baby and feeding him. You know, I usually feed him for about half an hour, perfect rosary. Mm-hmm. And I just whisper it under my breath, you know, to him and with him. And it doesn't have to be anything formal. It doesn't have to be anything major. It just means that we have to take the opportunity to do it. And there's so many ways to do it. As long as we're looking for them, we can find them.
Right. So, Gretchen, I want to thank you so much for spending time with us today. Again, we spent the episode going over your book, Why the Rosary, Why Now? From our Sunday visitor. Great book. I highly recommend it. Any closing thoughts, and where can they find your work? Where can we find your book?
Yes, well, thank you again so much. You know, this book was truly a labor of love. It was an incredible opportunity, a wonderful project to work on. You know, and I want to just really emphasize that the excerpts that are included in this book are all wonderful, but they're just a handful of what's out there, a handful of the testimonies to the power of the rosary, which just makes it all the more interesting and compelling and all the more reason why we should be praying the daily rosary. If you would like to follow the Why the Rosary, Why Now, we have a Facebook page. You can easily do a search for it. We're posting memes. We try to post a meme every day with a quote from one of the people who are included within the book. Also encouragements on praying the rosary, reminders to pray the rosary. It's a great resource. You can also go to www.osvcatholicbookstore.com. That's OSV as our Sunday visitor, catholicbookstore.com. And you can purchase the book there. You can also find it on Amazon. I'm so grateful for you having me on today.
You're quite welcome. So, everyone, you've been listening to Off the Shelf. I'm your host, Pete Sox, of Catholic Book Blogger. And until next time, God bless.